Welcome to the Don't Panic Radio Show. My name is Steve Vinson. Sitting right over there is Paul Schultz.
Who isn't going to say, hey, how you doing?
And this is... Thank you for listening. Thanks for telling a friend. Thanks for joining us. Nothing you're about to hear is true. And we're joined this week by a very special guest, Andy Martello. Welcome, Andy.
Thank you so much for having me back. Happy New Year to all of you.
Happy New Year.
Both of you. Or all your listeners, or both of them. Happy New Year. That's all I'm saying.
For those of you that don't remember, or if you're new to the show, Andy's he's an author, an entertainer, a comedian from Chicago. He lives in Las Vegas, Nevada now, as I understand it.
I do, yes, indeed.
As Facebook tells me, and
everything you read on Facebook is true. Don't let those politicians fool you. Everything on Facebook is true.
That's
I knew it.
I have a lot of truth. A lot of truth on Twitter and a lot of truth on Facebook. I have more truth probably than anybody. And my truth is terrific, unlike other people's truth.
You know, you're only going to get better as these 8 years go by.
That's true.
With that impression.
Well, as we're doing the show from Canada.
Boy, I'm just happy here in Las Vegas. I have never smoked pot a day in my life. And on January 1st, it was legal for personal use. Here in Nevada, and I'm thinking on January 20th, I am just going to hit up a fatty the size of my leg, and I'm going to just forget the next 8 years. That's what I'm going to do.
Get a spotter.
No, I'm just going to throw myself in one of those cool traction beds and just chill out. I'm going to have an IV solution that's basically just ground up Cheetos and just pour it right in. You know, just all munchies and fattening food just put in. In a nice flurry into my system.
Hey, careful with those Cheetos, man. You'll end up part of Trump's cabinet.
I can't be in Trump's cabinet. I don't make $1 billion a year as a working class hero.
Another thing about Andy that I didn't know until I was kind of looking into it a little bit for the show, I didn't know you were on so many TV shows. American Restoration, yep. Mystery Diners, Last Comic Standing, Street Genius. I did not know that.
Yes, I have had I would love to say I've done more television work, but yeah, I've done a fair amount. I can't complain, but sometimes I still do.
After January 20th, he'll be on Intervention.
Oh, yeah, exactly, yeah. They'll be doing that.
As well as... Yeah. As well as the Martha Stewart Snoop Dogg television show.
Yes. But yeah, I've been an entertainer since I was 15, and for everyone in the Chicago area, to this day, even though it hasn't been on the air in so long, the one that still makes their eyes pop up is the fact that I was on the Bozo show 6 or 7 times. They still go nuts for that. I can always tell how old somebody is now by how happy they are when I tell them I was on the Bozo show.
That does make me happy. You know, however, were you ever on the Ray Rayner show?
I was not. He was off the air by the time I was trying to be an entertainer. I still to this day believe that a few little individual scenes from various shows aside, the single greatest television programming in the history of the medium was when Ray Rayner would march around the studio with Chelveston the Duck. All it was music and this dude in a jumpsuit with a bag of birdseed being chased by a white duck. I could watch a full 60 minutes of that damn thing. I mean, it was the greatest bit. I used to miss my school bus because they were getting close to showing Chelveston. I'm like, I gotta watch. And you know, my mom never once minded giving me a ride to school if I missed the bus because we were watching. Because she was watching the damn duck too. It's just a duck, music, and a guy with birdseed, and yet it was the most fascinating. I don't think television has ever been as good.
Didn't Captain Kangaroo have a duck, too, or was that a goose? That was a goose, wasn't it?
I think he had a goose. I don't know if it was a real goose or a puppet. I don't remember. Captain Kangaroo,
he was a puppet.
He was too kid for me. Ray Rayner, that was a show.
Yes, I loved Ray Rayner. Every solstice, he would try to balance an egg.
Yes, he would do all those silly things that to this day I still remember. You know, I remember he had the dual baseball cap during baseball season.
Yes.
It would have Cubs on one side and you turn it over. It looked like a Sherlock Holmes cap.
Yep.
It would just be Cubs on one side, Sox on the other, and he had all these note paperclip to his jumpsuit. And I mean, parents watch the show as well as kids. They, you know, we'd watch the stupid cartoons and the duck and all that nonsense, and parents would watch because, like, he was the idiot who thought it would be a great idea to do traffic and weather on television.
Yep.
Now, there's genius. That guy, that was a genius television program. I wish to hell there was something that good on TV now.
There is something that good on podcasts. It's called Don't Panic.
Nice. This is true. You know, you guys need your own television show and a duck. Own television show. It was just a show. It would be a show. But if you have the duck, that's golden. I'm telling you right now, get a duck.
The other thing you've got going on, you know, last time we talked, you had a couple of books, a book of poetry and the Kings of Las...
The King of Casinos, yes.
Kings of Casinos.
King of Casinos, which I'm happy to say in 2016 earned its 14th award, which is like, hey, cool. You know, if I had the 50 cents, I could still get the cup of coffee. But it's still cool to say. And the audio version of that book came out last year. And hot on the heels of all those things, the poetry book was out then. But just last year, not too soon after getting that 14th award for King of Casinos, I was named by the Las Vegas Review-Journal, our major metropolitan newspaper out here. I was named in their Best of Las Vegas poll. I was named the best author. So I was pretty happy about that.
That's way cool.
Yeah, but once again, if I had the 50 cents, I could still get a cup of coffee. But at least I have bragging rights. For the rest of my life, I can always say I was an award-winning author and a Best of Las Vegas award winner. So, you know. Ladies, line up. I'm unzipping my pants soon. You know you're going to want a piece of that.
It's like a hot air balloon, but instead of hot air, it's filled with pussy. And it's just somebody... and somebody pokes it with a pin, and it just explodes pussy all over you.
You know, it's funny. That phrase is actually on my business card.
Oh, wow.
It's like a hot air balloon, only it's filled with pussy. And with that, I am now getting fired from all of my regular jobs.
Really light pussy, because it makes a balloon go up. That's the part I hadn't totally thought that joke through, tell you the truth. It'd probably actually weigh it down. Like a bunch of pussies and a balloon, it'd probably just like fall.
Right? I'm just going to go ahead and say, if you've got the time to just detach that many and put them in a balloon, really... The issue is not whether or not it's going to fly. You have way bigger things to worry about.
It puts the lotion on its skin. It's like, Anyway.
Wow, this took a dark turn quickly. Well, I'm so happy to be here.
Welcome to the show.
Welcome to 2017.
Yes.
And I mean this, on January 20th, every woman I meet from now on, I will not shake her hand. I am going to grab her by the pussy, and now I will put it in a hot air balloon.
I'm going to grab your pussy and put it in a hot air balloon.
That's right. Oh, man. Man, can you imagine if Dr. Dre said that? Everyone would think it was the hottest thing that ever heard. We got a bunch of white guys on a podcast said, we just sound like we should be thrown in jail.
The honor that it is, because I believe you're the most famous, non-famous person that we've ever had on the show.
Well, it's funny. In my, I released two books. Just came out, and one of the key through lines in one of the books is how I am the most famous, non-famous person in the world. And actually, I may put that on my website and my business card, because it's true. If you Google me, I am basically I'm like a rash all over the internet. I'm a virus that even the snooty Apple users can't get rid of. You know, I'm just there. You put in Andy Martello, any search engine, I just pop up everywhere. That being said, with the exception of the people I went to high school with, or you know, I have a lot of friends who always. Because I work for The Price is Right Live, and because I've done a few television shows and things like that, they always come up and they go, oh my God, you're famous. I'm like, I'm really not. Watch me wait in line at this casino buffet and not get a seat. I'm telling you, I am not famous. But, you know, everybody has their own definitions of fame. I'm definitely not famous because I didn't die in 2016. And
you and Betty White.
I've been fortunate. Yeah, exactly. But I like the idea of, you know, I hope one day to be more famous so I am no longer the most famous, non-famous person in the world. But, you know, I happily accept it. It's a nice moniker to have. You know, why not?
You could be the least famous, famous person in the world.
Yeah, that's my next goal, actually. It's kind of like being the world's tallest dwarf. You kind of, it's a dubious title, but you do still want to achieve it.
The world's tallest dwarf is probably taller than the world's shortest giant.
Possibly. Yeah, mm-hmm. It really is. It's a fine line. It's a fine line.
So you've taken this, being famous but non-famous, you've taken this and you've parlayed it into a fine book called Stupid Stories About Famous People, am I right?
Yes, indeed, yes. Of the two books that came out this year, that one has my favorite title of all time, Andy Martello's Stupid Stories About Famous People.
I like it.
I've been entertaining, making money as an entertainer. You know, the joke I tell people is, they always say, well, so what's it like being a professional entertainer? And I said, as soon as I make a living at it, I'll let you know. But the fact is, I've been, you know, a professional entertainer pretty much since I was 15. And in that amount of time, as soon as you get in the entertainment field, even if it's like in the most ancillary way, even if you just happen to be a guy, you know, who cleans up after the Teamsters have cleaned off all the crap from the movie set, somebody invariably, they want to know if you've ever met somebody famous. I mean, I've probably heard the question, have you ever met anyone famous? Have you ever worked with anyone famous? I've probably heard that question 1,000 times or more. And not long ago, my younger brother encouraged me to write this particular book, because anytime I'm asked those questions, I'll rattle off a couple of these, you know, silly stories, and I call them stupid stories because I'll give you some examples of them in a bit, but I call them stupid stories because only I would have done or said the idiotic things that I did or said when interacting with people considerably more famous than myself. But, you know, they were always stories I would just tell people at parties or at bars whenever asked, you know, if I met anyone famous. And he's like, you should really write these down. This would make a great book. And I remember telling him, I said, nobody wants to read my stupid stories about famous people. And when it clicked in my head, I'm like, wow, that would make a really good title. Okay, I'll write the book. sometimes all you need is a good title. If you have a good title, you may have a good book. And it's a collection. There will be more stupid stories about famous people down the road and things like that. But it's essentially a collection of, like, the idiotic things I did or said when working with people like Audrey Hepburn and Michael Jordan and John Glenn and Bozo, Wizzo, Cookie, Tony Curtis, Gladys Knight, you know, stupid things that only I would have done or said. And what's kind of cool about it is if you're from the Chicago area, the vast majority of the stories are stuff that happened to me roughly from around the age of 18 until about 35. When I was making the majority of my living in Chicago. So it actually turns out to be very much a Chicago book, as well as a book of memoirs and funny stories. And, you know, meeting guys like Buddy Guy or Coco Taylor or Michael Jordan. You know, some real Bill Curtis. You know, some very, very Chicago people and some of the places I was at, things like that. I love to tell people it's secretly an autobiography of me. But because nobody gives a damn about me, because I'm not famous at all, I tell them it's peppered also with stupid stories about famous people. Available on Amazon right now.
I'll tell you what, you said the Google thing, the Amazon thing works too. You type in Andy M.A. and Andy Martello comes up as the suggested, you know, search.
You're kidding.
That's what I was like.
That's awesome.
I got to get these books. I've been seeing you talk about them on Facebook. I got to get out there to Amazon today.
That's crazy. Well, I'm glad to know there aren't many authors named Andy with their first letters and their last name being M.A. That bumps my status up a little bit.
It's good. It's a good thing. And one of your books has like 60 some reviews. I was like, that's a lot of reviews.
Yeah, The King of Casinos is really, yeah, my first book, I'm still to this day extremely proud of it. In fact, at the time we're recording this lovely podcast, that book came out exactly 3 years ago today.
Wow.
And it's got about about 64 reviews. The vast majority of them are 5 stars, which is humbling, to say the least. And while I have neither a cart nor a horse, so it makes it really difficult for me to say I am putting the cart before the horse when I say this next phrase, but it is one step closer to becoming a major motion picture than it was last time we talked. So maybe by the time I'm the least famous, famous person, maybe there will be a movie out. Who knows?
Hey, then you could be the richest non-famous famous person.
Oh, I would love that. Yeah, really, I don't need to be famous as long as I can afford to take a vacation. That would be nice.
Yeah.
Well, I've always said, you know, rich and famous is nice. I would like to be both. But to be honest, I would just like to be comfortable enough so that when my car breaks down on the side of the road, I'm not actually panicking. I'm just like, oh, this is no big deal. I'll just call someone. It's taken care of. Or if I have like some sort of health issue, I don't have to sit there and figure out how many credit cards I need in order to cover my deductible. You know, I think that's a fair goal. I would just like to be comfortable. That's a fine goal.
Throwing money at problems is a beautiful thing if you got the money to throw.
Yeah, I mean, I don't necessarily want to throw money around, but I don't mind if some of it falls off in appropriate places.
Well, you know, you get that movie deal. Hey, isn't that the reason a lot of people do graphic novels, Paul?
Yeah, I'm sure today it is.
The joke. The joke is, if everybody you want to get your script read, write a comic book.
Yeah. Hey, Paul, you want to write a comic book about King of Casinos?
Yeah, man. Why not?
Well, we can make this. We can make this happen.
Last time I asked Paul to illustrate something for me, he blew me off. So I don't know. You could try.
Well, I know nothing about that. I'm certain I didn't ask him to do something for me for a T-shirt.
Hey.
Hey now.
Those were difficult times.
They definitely were. Welcome.
Back in the day, Andy, I actually, Paul's very generous with his talents. And back in the day, before the internet, basically before porn was readily available to the kids.
Yeah.
I couldn't even get my hands on a dirty book. I mean, my dad was careful. He did leave one out one time, which was great. I was a little too young to know what I was looking at. Anyway, the point is, Paul could draw super well, and he got he got a ton of requests for like naked chicks, and I didn't realize he got a ton of requests. I thought I was the only one. Like, draw me a naked girl. The last one got all smudged up. I appreciate that you use a pencil normally. Could you use a pen so it doesn't get all smudgy this time? Because it's all I got.
I bought a lot of bunches at school with those drawings.
It's that or the Sears catalog. A friend of ours, Andy, invented, I don't know if you ever heard of the website Adult Friend Finder.
Oh, yeah. Of course. Yeah. I mean, what? Never
heard of it. Never. He invented it. He invented it and then sold it to Penthouse or Hustler, I forget which one, for $500 million. And Paul reminded, we were talking about that. $500 million.
If your friend would like to invest in a movie, because I have something for him.
Well, that's enough money.
And the comic book based on the movie.
That's enough money to cover your deductible if something, you know, happens.
Yeah, absolutely.
The thing is, Paul reminded me, I had forgotten about this. So Adult Friend Finder is kind of a matchmaking service for alternative couples, basically. And
for relatively kinky people, yes.
Yeah. And Paul reminded me that this guy was, his name's Andy. We talk about a lot of Andys.
Yeah, we know a lot of
Andy's.
We know a lot of Andy's on this show. Anyway, his name was Andy as well. And he was in the computer club in high school, and they did this thing where they handed out 3x5 cards, and you were supposed to write like some things about yourself on there. Or was it a questionnaire? It was a questionnaire, wasn't it?
It was a questionnaire, yeah.
And you filled out the questionnaire and paid them $1, and then they ran this computer program to match up people to, you know, boys with girls that would be compatible to date. And I never made the connection.
You know what happened with that? The neighbor that lived between Steve and I, that's where he actually met the woman that he like was with till the day he died.
Didn't he commit suicide?
No, it was an accident. It was a motorcycle accident.
Anyway,
that's what I was getting at.
So, Andy.
We've covered a lot of ground already here. We've put pussies in hot air balloons, adult friend finder, motorcycle accident, suicide. You know, I don't even want to talk about my damn books. This is great.
How about singing the blues with Buddy Guy? How does that happen?
This is one of those stories where I explained to people up front, I didn't actually meet him. I didn't shake his hand. I didn't do anything like that. Yet I found myself in a position where I had to be singing blues songs, essentially with or in front of Buddy Guy. I was doing an event at the downtown Sheraton Grand in Chicago as a Blues Brothers impersonator. And this client, our job was going to be easy. We were going to do like a 15, 20-minute set as the Blues Brothers to entertain the crowd and then lead them into the next room where they would see their super-secret headlining performer. And for weeks, the person who booked us would not tell us who the performer was. Just that it's a big name and we want it to be a secret. We want to surprise everybody at the party. And it got to the point where, you know, we would do our songs and we would reference people who wrote them and this, that, and the other, and it dawned on us, we're like, sooner or later, you got to tell us who the person is so we don't accidentally say the guy's name. You know, I mean, what could possibly be happening? And which turned out to be a total lie. We didn't care. I just wanted to know. And the day of the event, even the CEO of the company was bugging us because the CEO had no idea who the super secret performer was. And when we get there, we get the lady to finally tell us, and she goes, it's Buddy Guy. And now I'm like, well, damn it. You know, that sucks because now me, I'm pretending to be a blues singer, have to sing the blues in front of a guy who kind of invented them. And I'm like, this. And then we said, screw it, we'll just do the show the way we always do. And during the show, we're doing, you know, you're doing your classics, your Sweet Home Chicago, and your you know, Give Me Some Lovin', and, you know, you name your Blues Brothers songs from the movie, and we're doing those, we're doing some comedy in between. And the partition opens up between the two rooms, and staring at us is Buddy Guy. Like, you know, with his polka dots and the goofy hair and the sunglasses and the whole nine yards. And I'm trying, and now I'm like having this moment where I'm like, oh, Christ, this is not good. This is not good. I'm being judged. I know I'm being judged. And I look over, and he's waving at me to get my attention, and he's giving me like this awesome thumbs up, you're doing good, kid, kind of thing. And I'm like, really? Oh, okay. So then we bring him over into the next room. As we're finishing Sweet Home Chicago, the music ends, yet you could still hear music playing, and he started playing exactly in the same key, same song in the next room, knowing that I was going to start bringing guests in there, which was kind of cool. It was like, we finished the song and there's still music, you know, but we're like now the Pipers of Blues, bringing people into the next room. And we get there, and like, he's going on and on about, man, that Blues Brothers, they were great. Now, he may have meant the actual Blues Brothers were great. I choose to believe that's what he meant, but he kept referencing me. And at any given point, what was really strange is all these people were asking me why we weren't up there singing. And I said, I think Buddy Guy is probably a better deal. You should probably go watch Buddy Guy. And this one, you know, after I had my brief little moment, you know, sort of on stage with Buddy Guy and we're kind of that sort of thing, you know, this woman is insisting that we should still be up there. And then, in classic fashion, he starts playing Mustang Sally, and the woman just leaves. At the end of it, oh, I know that song. Gotta go. Bye. See you, Saint Jake. I'll talk to you later. So that's why this is a stupid story about a famous person. Because if I just sat there and said, oh, yeah, I sang Blues Brothers, he was in the other room, but it's not a good story. But what brought me there and what happened in there is a good story. It's a classic stupid story. And I had similar things with Coco Taylor. Audrey Hepburn is the one people ask about the most, and that's another one I didn't actually meet, but I had like a wonderful moment with her that somebody explained to me when I tried telling them how stupid these stories are. They said, yes, but you did, like, the things I did or said to some of these people probably set me apart in their minds, because people like Audrey Hepburn met, you know, sycophants and autograph speakers their whole lives, you know. And I wasn't that guy. I was just the doofus who happened to be working an event at UNICEF at the Palmer House. And all night long, she's out there. You know, this was impressive even to me, because my parents, went nuts when they found out I was working this event with Audrey Hepburn, you know. And we ended up posing for pictures, me and the other entertainers that night. Somewhere in the world exists a photograph of me with Audrey Hepburn and like 6 or 7 other Chicago entertainers. I've never seen it, but I was there. I know it again. The night is getting towards the end. I'm finishing up a break. I'm kind of by a water fountain near an elevator, and I can tell her night is just about to end, and she was as graceful and as beautiful as you had always, always hoped Audrey Hepburn would be. And she's shaking every last hand, and she's posing for every last photograph, and she's signing every single stupid piece of paper somebody's handing in her head, or in her hand. And I notice she's finally done, and I'm like, this is it. She's done for the night. And I have to get back to work, finish up my shift. And we're walking just moments earlier. We posed for a photo. She watched me do my corny little juggling act at some point. And she looks at me with those beautiful Audrey Hepburn eyes and smiles, that perfect Audrey Hepburn smile. And we have that nice little moment. And I'm thinking, this is my only chance to say something to her. And as we're walking by, I just look at her and I say, Miss Hepburn, you are one classy broad, which is clearly the wrong thing to say to Audrey Hepburn. And she smiles, and she gets in the elevator, and she hits the button, and she goes, darling, you have no idea. And the door closed, and that's the end. There's my stupid story about Audrey Hepburn.
I'm going to guess you weren't the first one to say that to her.
I hope I was at least the first one that night.
Yeah, well, given the era that she was, you know, did most of her work in, I'm sure she was called worse.
Well, perhaps, but yeah, moments like that. It's a fun book. There's probably about 30 different, you know, and some are a little more in-depth interactions, people I actually worked with more hands-on and things like that, but there's probably about 30 different big-name celebrities everywhere from the world of politics, sports celebrities, television, there's local celebrities, movies, rock musicians. There's a really good representation of just some of the people that I've encountered as an entertainer over the last 30 plus years. And it's a fun book.
That's fascinating. Was Ted Kennedy drunk when you met him?
Oddly enough, he was. As a matter of fact, he was. In fact, this was an embarrassment. Many of the stories involved me either wearing Blues Brothers outfits or I used to be a clown for Ringling Brothers Circus. So I got to meet, in one night, I got to meet John Glenn, C. Everett Koop, Ted Kennedy, and a billion other major politicians while wearing stupid Ringling Brothers clown makeup, okay?
Nice.
And imagine, in my head, here I am, 19, 20 years old. I'm in Washington. I'm working Washington Press Corps dinners, saluting the 101st Congress, okay? And my job was the best. I was supposed to stand by this escalator not far from the entrance, bring the guests there, and tell them where the party is, all right? And I really wasn't supposed to leave my station for any reason. And it was a good gig because I got to know the entire guest list before all the photographers downstairs did. And Ted Kennedy walks in the room, and because it wasn't an election year, in fact, I make mention of this in the book, like when Surgeon General C. Everett Koop came into the room, everyone stopped with like this reverence and awe, because he just kind of commanded, you know, he had that look with the epaulets on his shoulders and the awesome beard and all that nonsense. And then when Ted Kennedy came in, nobody gave a shit. And I'm like, this is a Kennedy, this is a member of Camelot here. And my, you know, he'd been in Washington for a billion years at that point, so I figured seeing Ted Kennedy there was just par for the course. But I made a beeline to meet this guy. I'm like, no, I'm leaving my, I don't want to miss a chance to shake this dude's hand. And I can only imagine what this, because he definitely was inebriated that night, and what, you know, was this the first time that he saw a bespectacled, you know, crazy clown with orange hair walking up to him, or was this the first time that it actually happened and it wasn't just in his head, you know, that kind of thing. And you know, we're shaking hands and we're walking, I push his arm in my arm, we're walking arm in arm, okay, to the escalator, and for the life of me, I don't remember what stupid things I said to him, but I do remember at the end of our little moment when we get to the escalator, he looks at me and he thanks me for welcoming him, and then he just says, Where's the bar?
Of course he did.
Of course he did. Of course, that's a tough question. So grab a drink, and I, watch out, there's a lot of photographers around, you know, whatever I stupidly said to him. And it was cool. And it wasn't an election year for him. So he was not in what my dad always called election year shape. You know, he definitely had a little more weight on him. His hair was really disheveled. It's like every time it was time for him to run for office, he lost like 40 pounds and had his hair all done good, and he just looked great. He knew he had the gig for at least another year or two, and so he was just doing his thing. And, you know, what the hey? That's another one I tell my parents, and they're like, what did you say to him? And I'm like, well, I told him this, and then, what did he say back? And all he said is, where's the bar? And they're like, oh, that's
where's
great.
The bar?
That's great, Andy. Where's the bar?
I need a drink and directions to Chappaquiddick. All right, you got it.
Yeah. There you go. And what was even funnier for me is this man, and maybe it was because he wasn't in election year shape, had the single largest head of any human being I had ever met. And it looked, to me, it looked like a bobblehead version of himself was walking arm in arm with me at this hotel. And just maybe half an hour to an hour earlier, I had just met John Glenn, you know, first man to orbit the Earth. Yeah. And I half expected John Glenn to come back from the party, circle Ted Kennedy's head, and then go downstairs.
Nice.
That's how big his head was.
Thank you. John Glenn, who recently passed away. Ted Kennedy, who passed away a while ago.
Yeah, he passed away a while ago.
I assume C. Everett Koop's probably dead, isn't he?
I think C. Everett Koop is still with us. I didn't look it up. I don't know for certain, but I'll have to look that up. But John Glenn died not too soon after the book came out, and I thought, come on, the story wasn't that embarrassing.
You know, along the same lines, the other book, Here's Your Host, or Hosts, is also about famous people, right? Is it stories, or is it interviews, or what is that one?
This book is called Here's Your Host, Insights and Interviews with Game Show Greats. And in the years that I've been an entertainer, and certainly in the years since I've been working with the touring the North America with The Price is Right Live, I've gotten to meet and work with, you know, many, many different people who, were hosts of major television shows, and particularly the game show world. And hosting on television is a dying art. I mean, aside from the few late-night talk shows that are still around and a handful of game shows left in the world, there really aren't a lot of television presenters anymore. And it dawned on me a couple of years ago, I was like, I've worked with, everyone from Joey Fatone to Jerry Springer and people like Entertainment Tonight's Bob Goen and Mark Wahlberg from Antiques Roadshow and from Temptation Island and Todd Newton from Whammy and all, people like this. And I've gotten to watch them, whether they were hosting Price is Right Live or whether we were doing some different type of game show for a corporate event somewhere. I've gotten to watch these people, and I really started looking at it as, what does it take to make a great host, whether you're a host on television or even just a host at a party, because all of these guys, even though they've all, let's face it, the Jerry Springer show is vastly different from The Price is Right. And yet, when he's hosting a game show, or even his own game show, Baggage, he has this innate ability of putting people instantly at ease that he's never met before, they might be in their most exciting moment of their lives. How do you take this task of not only keeping people calm and making them have a memory they'll cherish for the rest of their lives and get to the point of doing the show, running the games and things like that? And I decided I was going to talk to, I worked with, initially there were about 11 people, and 10 of them were gracious enough to grant me an interview for the book. And so I figured I would just talk to the guys who've been doing this for 30, 40 years and really break down the science of being a good television host. And in there is also, my recollections of what it's like to work with them, how their personalities are the same, how they're different, how they take the task of being a good television presenter. And it's really, in many ways, it's a unique book because there aren't a lot of, to my knowledge, there aren't a lot of books that actually go into the nuts and bolts of why you watched Bob Barker for 40 years and why you may only remember Peter Tamarkin if you were a big game show fan. But they both had so many of the same qualities. What were those qualities? And so this is, it's another book where it talks about people that I know personally and have worked with, Mark Summers from the Food Network and Double Dare fame and things like that. What do they think makes a great host? And how do they go about the task of, anytime, it doesn't matter if you're doing Price is Right or Let's Make a Deal or even just any crazy corporate giveaway where we're just going to create a game show and you're going to be hosting. How do you walk out on stage knowing that everybody is going to make a joke about you not being Bob Barker? How do you do that? How do you make the show your own? And that's what that book is. Here's Your Host, Insights and Interviews with Game Show Greats. And I actually talked to a legendary Hollywood agent named Richard Lawrence, who has represented or worked with damn near every great television host, particularly in the game show world, in the business. Guys like Dick Clark and George Fenneman and Peter Marshall, and certainly about 7 of the 10 people I talk about in the book. I got a lot of great insights from him as well. So it's a fascinating book. And I tell people, if you read this book, even if you're not, you'll learn something if you have aspirations to be in entertainment for certain. But if you just want to host a party better, read this book, because there's a lot of great insights as to just how to make people feel welcome in general, how to talk to people in a manner that you can always have fun with them, but you're never talking down with them. You're never intimidating to people. And I'm very proud of that book. I'm really, really happy. It oddly enough, it's selling better. They were both released on the same day. And that book is actually selling better than Stupid Stories About Famous People, which I wouldn't, if you would have bet me, I would have guessed more people would have bought the Stupid Stories About Famous People simply because there's more famous people in it. A lot of people are really taking to Here's Your Host. It's a fun little book. I'm very proud of both of them. Both available on Amazon. Just Google Andy M.A.
Apparently. Paul, you were trying to get my attention earlier. What's up?
Sia Recoup died in 2013.
I've told our producers to try to be discreet. I don't think they should have interrupted you like that, Paul.
Is anyone really discreet on your show? Let's be honest.
No, not at all. No. I've determined that my mother does not know how to listen to podcasts. I don't discourage her from listening. If she ever asks, I'll tell her you probably don't want to listen to this one. Especially
one day, MC Cavalier is going to drive up from India and show her how to do it.
Yeah, right.
Listen to what your son's up.
Listen
here.
To this thing about a balloon full of pussies. She'd be like, "What?
Right.
I didn't raise my son to be a pussy. I hope it's not about that." The Tom Bergeron, how is he as a host?
I've never worked with him, but I've always liked watching him.
Yeah.
Like when he was hosting that the most recent version of Hollywood Squares, I thought he was fantastic because you know that game for so many years was known as that was Peter Marshall's game, all those years that he was hosting, I've always liked about watching Tom Bergeron, even if it's whether he's doing funny home videos or doing Dancing with the Stars. He walks out on stage and he's just affable. You just want to like the guy.
Yep.
And he's a very quick-witted person with an excellent, excellent sense of humor and a good personality. He doesn't have like a cheesy game show smile. He just has that awesome, he smiles and you're like, all right, this is going to be fun. Whatever he says is going to be fun. But I remember when he was hosting his version of Hollywood Squares, I thought he was the perfect man for the job.
There was a moment on Dancing with the Stars, which I don't watch, but my wife watches it, and I may have been walking through the room. I may have stopped to rest my feet a little bit when this moment happened. Just want to be clear, I don't watch the show, but I did happen to see this little piece where...
You know, the more you protest, the more we realize that you know the winner of every season of Dancing with the Stars.
As the Bard once said... Methinks Steve is protesting way too much. I think he said it exactly like that.
It's an addictive little show. Few things are better than watching people like Penn Jillette try and be grateful. It's a good time. You're allowed to enjoy it. It's fine.
A friend of mine was on that show, Adam Carolla, from maybe you've heard of him?
Oh, sure.
From Los Angeles?
Yeah. Not that I ever watched the show, but didn't he come out in unicycle in one of his performances?
Yes, because he can't dance. And he was like, but I can ride a unicycle. one of the running jokes on the show is I always refer to him as a friend of mine. In fact, when we were talking to Andy Wright, another Andy, who lives in North Hollywood, Adam Carolla grew up in North Hollywood. So when we were talking to Andy, I just said, hey, a friend of mine grew up in North Hollywood.
I get it now.
And nobody ever asked me who it was or what. I was talking about Adam Carolla, who I've met once and have a completely stupid story about, but not a friend of mine. I mean, not a friend of mine at all. I would be his friend if I'm, you know. I wouldn't mind being his friend, but I enjoy his podcast. I enjoy his work. I enjoy his podcast. He made a documentary about the 24 Hours of Le Mans.
Right.
No, shit. That's a different documentary. He made a documentary about Paul Newman. That's what it was. And Paul Newman's racing career. And
there you go.
And he came to the Indy 500 to release. It was kind of his release party, was in Indianapolis. And so we bought tickets and went to this thing at the downtown museum. or whatever. Adam Carolla, whenever he does a public appearance, he always does, he'll stand there as long as it takes to meet everybody that wants to meet him.
Sure. Yeah, I've always heard that about it.
Yeah. And he, even, you know, if he just does a show, like if he does a stand-up or whatever, he always goes to the back. He stays there until everybody is done, right? Till the line is emptied. And anyway, so we got in line, and I was thinking, I had already talked to one of his assistants, like one of the producers of his show, who is a character on the show, kind of, you know, like he talks about everybody. So I had already stood there and talked to him for a while, and I was trying to, before I went up and talked to Adam, I was trying to come up with something clever. I don't know. You've met a lot of famous people, Andy, and so you probably don't do this. But for me, I feel like when I meet somebody famous, especially somebody who I like a lot, like Adam Carolla, I'm like, I got to do something to either get him to laugh or remember me, right? I don't know why I do that. I mean, I could, I suppose, commit a crime. He'd probably remember that.
Nothing else. One thing I do, if I know I'm only going to have a brief moment and I can tell the person just doesn't want to be bothered, you know, like I did this to Kenny Rogers, of all people, which is funny because this was really before the internet came out, before there was a website called Men Who Look Like KennyRogers.com.
Yeah.
I walked up to him, and I've used this line. I said it when I met Cyndi Lauper. I said it when I met Kenny Rogers. I said it when I met Bill Weddington from The Bull. I just walked up to Kenny Rogers and said, anyone ever tell you you look a lot like Kenny Rogers? I could tell that it's the perfect thing to say if you only have a moment with a celebrity, because every celebrity I've said that type of phrase to, you know, yeah, they won't tell you you look like Cyndi Lauper. They all say the same thing. They all go, I get that a lot.
And yes. They walk away. Nice. That's funny. Which, ironically, Adam's friend, who I had been talking to, asked me if anybody ever told me I look like Tom Arnold. And I said, first time. I was like, first time I get David Letterman, I get Drew Carey, I get Garrison Keillor. And he's looking at me, he's like, no, I don't see any of those, but definitely Tom Arnold. And I was like, how?
I get Tom Arnold a lot. Tom Arnold, and depending on how thin I am at the time, Mike Myers. If I'm clean shaven, and I get people who think I look like Mike Myers an awful lot.
I could see that.
And I'm waiting for, it hasn't happened nearly often enough. I'm waiting for them to, you know, hey, anyone ever tell you you look a lot like George Clooney? That nice. Would make me feel a little better. You know, it just doesn't work that way.
You're like, never. But where's the balloon full of pussies? Because if that's true.
It's at Tom Arnold's house.
It is the best Ted Kennedy impression.
Yeah. So I'm with my wife at this event, and it's my turn to meet Adam Carolla. And the funny thing I came up with was, as we walk up to Adam, I say, Adam, I would like you to sleep with, meet my wife. And he just looks at me, and he looks at the guy standing next to him, and he has this look on his face of terror, like, holy shit, what's about to happen? And
what do I do?
It's about to happen.
And so I was like, I'm just kidding, meet my wife, whatever. He meets her, gets a picture with her, and it's my turn to get the picture. And while he does this thing, I bet a lot of people do this, he does this thing where he's got his arm around me, and I've got my arm around him, you know, for the picture, and he's like rubbing my shoulder, like squeezing my shoulder, rubbing my shoulder, and I was like, oh, I just
a little lower.
I was just like, I like you so much, I just love you, I love everything, I like you. It's just like the biggest doofus in the world, and out of the corner of my ear, I hear this Mike August guy who I'd been chatting with earlier go, this is the guy I was telling you about. He lives like a few blocks from where David Letterman grew up. And doesn't he look just like Tom Arnold? And Adam, who I assume is still reeling from the, who's this idiot that just talked about sleeping with his wife? He's like, I guess. He's like, no, look at him. Look at him. He looks just like Tom Arnold. There are pictures of me standing there with him. I look
You look like an idiot. You got that idiot smile.
I do.
You're so happy.
Oh, that was
so,
just
so
silly.
Maybe when you said, I want you to sleep with my wife, he was just worried that, that you were married to Roseanne Barr.
Yeah.
Maybe that was the problem.
This is Tom Arnold. Do I really want to sleep with his wife? Okay, all of that having been said, there's something I want to clear up from earlier, just a little piece of housekeeping. You had said when you were doing the Blues Brothers thing that you were supposed to be acting, wait, what did you say? You were singing as a real blues singer? You were supposed to be impersonating a real blues singer? What did you, what were the words you used?
I was working for a Blues Brothers tribute act.
Okay.
And so I was Jake, and of course I had an Elwood, and we either sang to tracks or we would have a band and that sort of thing. So here I am pretending, which really, when you think about it, I guess I was impersonating a guy who was doing an act as a blues singer. Yeah.
That's what I wanted to clear up. You weren't pretending to be a blues singer. You're the guy who was pretending to be the guy who was pretending to be a blues singer. So I just wanted to clear that
and
little.
Yet, that guy has still sold more albums than I have. So, you know, what can I say?
Yeah, but he's dead, right? Jake or Elwood? I get them mixed up. Which one's which?
Last I checked, John Belushi is still dead. I don't think he's making a comeback anytime soon.
So you were the John Belushi of the act?
Yes. Okay. I would be Jake, yes. Right.
That's not a bad deal, because back then, you might have said, like back, say, 30 years ago, you might have said, I don't know, I'd rather be the Dan Aykroyd, because Dan Aykroyd's tall, thin. But now Dan Aykroyd looks like he ate John Belushi. I don't know.
Don't forget, though, Steve, you were Elwood back for Halloween 1 year.
I forgot about that. We did that, didn't we?
Yeah.
And everyone kept walking around going, wow, Tom Arnold is doing a Blues Brothers act.
Well, Andy, thanks for coming on the show. As usual, it was a pleasure, and you're funny, and you're
thank you very much for having me. It was always nice chatting with you, gents.
We loved having you.
Well, it's always nice to be had, so thank you.
There you go. All right, for Andy Martello and for Paul Schultz, I'm Steve Vinson. Thanks you. God damn.
Yeah, all right. You can't do that no more.
Really cut that out. I was about to say.
Yeah.
See, the show that comes. Oh, I know what I was going to do. All right. All right. Cut all that out. Well, that about does it for this week. Tell you what, just for good time's sake, head on over to the Do It Any Radio Hour podcast. And check those guys out. We'll put a link up on our Facebook page. Because, you know, nothing cleanses your palate of the Don't Panic radio show like the Do It Indie Radio Hour. Because those guys know what they're doing.
Nothing clogs your palate quite like it.
Yeah. If your palate feels clogged with pussy.
I feel I'm going to need to clear my throat after this.
Head on over to the Do It Indie Radio Hour, because they got no pussy over there.
They don't even have a balloon.
It's bad. It's really bad. Well, you know, maybe we'll float our little pussy balloon over to their studio. And
wasn't that
your website right now is just a giant hot air balloon.
No, that was Nina. Was that her name? 99 pussy balloon. Was that her name? Nina. Wasn't that?
I think it was Nana.
Nana.
Anyway.
Okay. For Andy Martello and for Paul Schultz, I'm Steve Vinson. Thank you for listening. Thanks for visiting our Facebook page. Thanks for going to Amazon and searching for Andy Ma or Tello. Don't forget, nothing you just heard was true. Thank you.
wrong with you, man? Get the other record. Damn.
Shit.